Hey, readers and writers. This episode was recorded with Squadcast, a web-based software that records studio-quality episodes from anywhere in the world. Squadcast records at each user's end and then uploads it to the cloud, so even if the call quality wasn't great at the time, the end file is always perfect. So that's a good thing. And it's never lost, which is even better. It's a paid service, so there is that. But for me, it's been worth it. If you're in the market for recording software, there's a link in the show notes to get a free trial. Now let's get on with the show. Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
Good morning, Deb. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, thanks for being on. How have you been Okay. I'm going to cut that part out.
Okay. Take two.
So why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
My name is Glenn Walker, and I am a high school government teacher. Just started my 28th year in education. I had worked in traditional setting, high school, a brick and mortar school for about 20 years. A balance of working in traditional school settings and also at-risk settings as well. And then 8 years ago, discovered the virtual environment, working from home, working with students, and just found that incredible, where students can learn really at any time. 365 days a year, 7 days a week, 12 months out of the year, that students can take on a course and learn, and just so happens to be about American government, which a lot in the news and that we hear about. And of course, today's as we're taping today, probably it's primary day in Florida. So awesome. That's a big news down here. So and then in my part time, I'm a full time husband and dad. I've been married to Melody now going on 32 years.
Ooh, congratulations.
And my daughter, Victoria, is getting ready to graduate from school. She's studying to be a cosmetologist at Aveda Institute. So she's getting ready to graduate.
My husband gets his haircut at Aveda's.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, they're great. I've had mine done there quite a few times. Uh-huh. So. And we have a year and a half old Boston Terrier named Winston, named after the British Prime Minister. And he is just a cutie. And he's my partner. He likes to sit when I'm writing, or sounding, he'll listen as I sound out conversations.
Right.
For part of a novel or something. And so leading into that, I do like to write. Ever since I was a teenager, I wanted to write. I had a teacher who inspired me in middle school to write. And it just finally got it into a form and a genre that I could really appreciate and understand, and came together with this book.
So let's talk about the book briefly. What's it about? What genre are we looking at?
So the genre we're looking at is the mystery, or the film noir, mid-century mid-20th century America. Yeah, 1940s, 1950s. So the story that I've written, The Red Zone Murders, takes place in the year 1948. So it's post-war America.
Okay.
Our hero is Joe Maxwell. He's a former U.S. Army combat
engineer.
That is an
excellent name for this genre, by the way. That's a great main character name.
And and I tied in another love of my life for football. I'm a big football fan. And I'm also a student of the history of the game. And he works for a team in New York called the New York Knights.
Okay.
And he's basically head of security, but it's really a glorified gopher position. It's nothing really that exciting. So in his spare time, he has started a private investigation firm called Maxwell and Associates. So as we open the novel, an old army buddy of his, Charlie Cooper, comes back into his life. Charlie's fallen on some hard times and wants to get some help from Joe. So Joe tries to help him out. And then all of a sudden, Charlie winds up murdered. and dead on Maxwell's doorstep.
Okay. So like on Maxwell, his literal doorstep?
Little doorstep. He winds up dead. So Joe's mission is to find out who murdered his best friend.
Okay.
And this kind of opens up into gambling on sports.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking there's got to be a seedy underbelly somewhere that he finds.
Communist agents working undercover in the United States, an escaped Nazi war criminal.
Oh, my goodness.
There's an election, you know, the 1948 presidential election's going on. So that, you know, kind of hopefully that'll tease the readers to want to to invest. But if you like detective fiction, if you're into Maltese Falcon, The Big Sleep, any of those, like you would see
who
on
that,
you
know, comic Turner Classic, with the guy with the yellow hat and jacket. My brother used to read those.
Oh yeah, Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy, that's the name.
Dick Tracy.
I was
if you're into those, or like the on Turner Classic Movies, on the weekends they do the noir movie. Eddie Mueller, I think, hosts those. So if you're into that, you know, that's kind of what I was going for.
Okay. What drew you to the noir genre?
Oh, I
why did you decide to make this novel noir?
Well, growing up, you know, I saw Star Wars when I was a teenager and thought, oh, okay, I'm going to be the next George Lucas. But then I got bored with that and then became enthralled with spy novels. You know, I love James Bond. And now the novel James Bond is so different from the movies. I mean, Bond in the books is so different. And so I think, okay, well, maybe get into spy novels, but just back and forth. And then I would really say what drew me was Humphrey Bogart. I've always loved Humphrey Bogart movies. Behind me, I've got a poster of Casablanca, and the other one here, I've got a poster of The Maltese Falcon. But just that of just a regular, ordinary guy gets thrown into some bizarre circumstances and, you know, he has to use his wits and his street smarts to try to solve it. And he's usually having to deal with a femme fatale, you know, someone who's not telling him the truth, or who you know, they've got their own issues they're having to work through. So I think I was like, man, again, a student of history, that time period after the war, the United States, you know, we've helped win World War II.
Experiencing incredible growth.
You know, soldiers come back, they got to become civilians again. And what life would have been like back then. So that was kind of what drew me to that genre.
Okay. What was the seed of inspiration for the story? Like, what was it that made you start?
Again, a love of football, but also a of wanting to write a mystery of, you know, from start to finish. How could I? Okay, someone's ended up dead. How do I plot it out? How do I write it to and then reveal at the end? Aha! It was the butler in the cabinet with the broom with the broom handle.
That's a scary image.
Yeah, the butler did it, you know, with the broom handle. But
In the closet. He's just standing in the closet with a broom handle.
Like the old Clue game. Right. But I always wanted to challenge myself to write something. Not saying I'm gonna be the next Hemingway or the next Agatha Christie, but something to where it would draw people's interest, either whether or not you knew about football, but you know, football wasn't the number one sport. That it is now. You had players who got paid more money for working jobs outside of football than they did. And then television was just beginning to be the big, the next thing over the horizon. I mean, radio was king. And so taking a gamble on putting programming on television, on the sport that not a lot of people watch. More people watch baseball or listen to baseball games or attend baseball
I was
games.
Just thinking, I thought baseball was the main sport, American sport.
And we look at it now here in 2022, football. I mean, we're talking about football 365 days a year. We're talking about, you know, if Tom Brady's going to come back to the Buccaneers. That was the big thing down here, is Tom coming back. But back then, it might have gotten a page or two in the back of a New York Times newspaper. But also the United States-Soviet Union relationship. You know, we're kind of seeing that again here now, after a couple of years of uneventfulness, but, you know, how the Cold War started. Maybe a little bit of a history lesson on that as well.
Now, did this idea percolate a lot for you? Or it did it just kind of snap?
And COVID kind of propelled me to, okay, I've got the time now. I've always complained I don't have time. I'm either working, starting a family, you know, trying to find a home, live.
Right.
Okay. COVID is okay. I've got time now. I can sit in front of either a typewriter, a computer, or a piece of paper, and I can sit and plan this out and not feel guilty about it because we can't go out anywhere, can't go to any concerts or anything. So COVID was kind of the, hey, you got time, you can do this, and it just, I put together an outline, and then an incredible book, which is going to kind of sound weird in the beginning that it helped me, but there is a screenwriting book by Sid Field, the great Sid Field, and it's about the secrets of how to write a screenplay, but it's also great in structuring a novel. And he talks about this note card method, and you have three acts. You have like three acts in a play, three acts in a movie. And so for each act, you have 14 cards. So you want to describe, you know, something that's happening in 14 cards or 14 scenes. So you want to end act one with some kind of either cliffhanger or reveal.
Right.
And so that kind of helped me in my structure. The other thing I wanted to do was I wanted the action to take place over the course of a football season. So I've got a time frame of, say, from September to December of 1948.
Right.
So that led me to, okay, I'm going to research what was going on. So, you know, go back through some old New York Times newspapers on their Time Machine archive, read books, you know, the 1948 election, or, you know, what was football like in that time period, get a hold of some YouTube videos of what football looked like, how they played. So that gave me a time frame. I knew where it would start, knew where it would end. And then, you know, just go from there.
Did you know the ending before you started writing, or did you find that out as you were writing?
Oh, that is a great question. I thought I knew the ending, but then...
That's a good answer.
I thought I knew the ending, but then I said, no, I've gotta really go out with a bang. And so I did add something like a last chapter, you know, thriller, exciting moment to kind of cap it off. I thought that would kind of keep readers on the edge of their seat to the very end.
Especially, I don't know, I'm kind of taking this twofold. It's a mystery. So maybe when you were writing it, you were leaving the thread of where you thought it was going to end up. And then you add the other big thing that'd be a nice touch. But I do usually find that I always know what I want the ending to be. And then it changes at some point and it surprises me.
Yeah. And it's, I had somebody who read it say, you know, there's a who done it and then there's a why done it. You know, so sometimes it's kind of like, okay, you get either the femme fatale or the main bad guy saying, well, this is why I'm doing it. You know, it's like in the James Bond films, you know, okay, I'm going to steal all the gold. I'm going to radiate all the gold in Goldfinger. And, before we kill you, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take over the world. We're going to do this. But in this one, it was more, like I said, you have these communist agents that are infiltrating the United States. And you have this escaped Nazi war criminal who, trying to pretend to be somebody else. Trying to insulate himself into American society. You know, what happened back there, that's long gone, you know.
Right. So you wrote it during COVID. How long was the writing process? How long did it take you from start to finish?
Oh, wow. So I want to say at least a good year.
Okay.
A good year.
That's actually not bad for his first novel.
It wasn't as I'm reflecting on it now, trying to come up with a sequel 2 years later, you know, trying to think of a sequel. But yeah, I look back on that and go, wow, I was able to do that in a year. Mm-hmm. To see, you look back on it, or I've had people read it and say, oh man, okay, tell me about this. Or, mm-hmm. you know, what were you thinking when you wrote this? But I was just kind of like, in the evening, you know, after work, I could sit down for 2 or 3 hours and, mm-hmm. you know, just plug away.
Joy of having an older child.
Yes. Yes.
I'm coming from a 5-year-old and 6-year-old standpoint. So the evening does not exist for us.
No.
Well, also, I mean, I guess you wrote it during COVID and you wrote it during the calendar year, but you said it had been percolating for a while. So
I had
a long time to think up the story.
Yeah. And it was just kind of like, okay, I wanted to do a detective story, film noir. Then it was just, okay, where do I put it at? I wanted football to be the background. I didn't want to... I've had one person where I said, boy, the football, it's great, except for all the football scenes. Because I take you to a football game and, okay, you know, Johnson passes the ball to Smith. And, you know, so I did include
like a radio announcer.
Yeah, I do. I do. In fact, I've got these little, at the end of each week, I have this fictional journalist, and it's a kind of a play on words. His name is Thurston Gold instead of Thurston Goal. Mm-hmm. And he writes for this fictional newspaper, and he kind of gives you the, hey, over in Detroit, the mm-hmm. Detroit defeated Cleveland. It's kind of like the color Walter Winchell, you know, right. style of, but I try to update you. There's a season going on. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was something I added. I thought, oh, some people might be interested in how the season's going along, you know, because mm-hmm. right. Maxwell works for a team. It would have been great if the team had done well. I just kind of as a side note, I used a computer program. It's like a sports simulation program mm-hmm. from a company called DK Sports. And you can create a league and you can have the computer play out using real player names.
Oh, well,
so that's
kind of
what I did. And I mentioned it in the foreword. So I have the season play out. And uh-huh. my hope was that New York would have done better. not to spoil it. New York struggles. But that's the way real life goes. Mm-hmm. So that kind of fits into that film noir. You know, we don't always get what we want, as the Rolling Stones say.
Did you have to fudge it a bit to, like, do they like get in the playoffs and you had to fudge that to make
I didn't in this one, but they came close.
Were there playoffs in the 40s?
Well, if you're tied, if the two teams are tied at the top of a division, they would uh-huh. do a one game playoff.
Okay.
That was how it was in the late 40s. But what they would do is they would take the top two teams from each division and we'd play in a championship game. But New York was in contention until the final week. And I think I kind of try to build that, you know, toward the end of the book.
That's really interesting. I love that you did that.
Yeah. But talk about fudging. I thought of that and, you know, it might go in the orphan file. Yeah. It might go in the orphan file.
How long is a film noir? Like how many, what's your word count on that?
Oh my gosh. I knew the page count. Yeah. I think it was like 250 pages.
Okay.
Well, I'm not. Yeah. The word count.
I wish
count,
I knew. Like, yeah. I wish I knew what the average word count for a page was.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just, it feels like everybody's always struggling to hit a word count. Like right now I'm struggling to hit a word count. I'm at 103,000. It needs to be 95. So I'm struggling in the opposite direction, but I know it feels like everybody's always struggling for word count.
I think that for me is like, you know, okay, the femme fatale walks into the office. Okay, I want to describe what she looks like. And mm-hmm. The other thing I did that I hadn't done in any of my previous attempts at writing was I told it from first person.
Okay.
I am telling it from Joe Maxwell's point of view. Mm-hmm. Before I would be, okay, it was, you know, it was the dawn and Joe Maxwell walks into his office. You know, this whole book I told from his point of view, a first person. I thought that also fit into the film noir. Mm,
definitely.
And it was hard because I wanted to do these other scenes, but okay, mm-hmm. he's not in the room. I can't have these other two people talking. So those were a couple
other.
That is
the problem with first person, that very limited point of view.
Yeah. So I'm having to tell it through his point of view. So I'm having to describe people the locker room of the stadium. Mm-hmm. So you would know what that looked. You're seeing it through Joe's eyes. So
interesting. What else had you written before this, like short story or something that were you more into a third person point of view?
I did a short story based on a Christmas, a family Christmas way back in the 1970s. I called it a Christmas Eve on Walker's Mountain, kind of a play on the Walton's Mountain thing.
Right.
It was a Christmas in 1973 or 1974. I wanted an Evel Knievel action cycle. I don't know. I've got a replica of it in the background there. That's all I wanted for Christmas. And there's a story of we're helping Dad buy Mom a microwave oven. Mom was not expecting and did not want a microwave oven. So it's kind of a Christmas story. You know, we're piling into the station wagon. We're going out, and then my dad decided to shoot off some flares to celebrate Christmas Eve. And we thought he shot the reindeer because we saw a red light or something in the sky. We thought that was Rudolph. So that was I did a short story about five or 6 years ago, and I had done it in a podcast format. So I kind of read it, had some holiday music in the background. Mm-hmm. I've never published that. I've been thinking about publishing. I've talked to some writer friends who said, you ought to look into publishing that like a literary magazine or something. I have attempted to do, you know, screenplays, but, you know, really, like I said, got stuck. Right,
they're a different beast.
It's a different, you know, exterior, park, London.
Exactly. There is no description. It's only dialogue.
Yeah.
So your short story, that was third person. So the first person was a departure for you?
Yeah, it really was. And it was, oh my goodness. It was like, there's this one great scene I got to do, but I ended up having Maxwell still in the room.
Okay.
Still able to do it.
It's like you got to figure out how to get your main character to the action.
How do I get
it to happen?
There was this other plot where he ends up having to go somewhere that I had not intended, but it was to kind of further the plot along. So.
You're going to have to excuse me. My dog has decided to come right next to me and cough.
That's okay. No worries.
I think he was running with a piece of food in his mouth, and now he's just, okay, everything's better. All right. I was like, oh no, I can hear his feet and he's coughing.
Yeah.
He's our big 80-pound, thinks he's a lap dog dog.
We have a Boston Terrier, and he thinks he's much bigger than he actually is.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Our big dog thinks he is much smaller than he actually is.
Yeah.
He thinks he can definitely fit on the kid's lap.
Yeah.
And he's like three times the size of them. That's hilarious. Okay. Let's pick up back where I had it. So let's talk about your second book. So you're just plotting it out now, it sounds.
Mm-hmm. I've got the plot. It's just the, you know, doing the research. It will take place in the 1950s. Originally, I was going to kind of fast forward it to like the 1957, kind of like the, you know, the birth of rock and roll. But I was
What year did the book one end?
1948.
Okay.
I thought that's going to be too big of a leap. And I was going to try to, I felt like it's going to be too much on the reader to catch up on some things, because I was going to really throw some things at them that had happened in the 9 or 10 years since that book. So I said, okay, let's back it up a little. Let's go to the early 50s.
Okay.
So you've got the House of Un-American Activities going on, the Hollywood 10. So I'm thinking, okay, let's move Joe to Los Angeles this time.
Okay.
So I'm thinking about having
like the heart of all noir there.
A heart of all, the homage to noir.
Yeah.
So you have Sunset Boulevard and all those. So this one will take place in the early 50s. It'll involve, of course, he's sent out on a simple case, and it's more than just a simple case. There's some evil doing going on that he'll fall into the middle
evil
of.
Evil doing in Los Angeles? No.
Some crazy characters. So I'm doing some research now, and a lot of it about Hollywood back in that time, because he ends up in a Hollywood studio. it. I don't know about you, but when I'm writing, I'm casting my book. I have actors in mind. Mm-hmm. And I wrote in black and white. I could see it as a black and white movie.
Yep.
I have a soundtrack when I'm writing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I put together a Spotify playlist because I do mention certain songs when I'm writing.
This song was on the radio as I was driving down the highway.
Yeah. Yeah, there was like Mañana by wasn't Peggy Lee. Who was? I can't think. Oh, gosh, I can't think who sang it now. But there's another one called Open the Door, Richard. Mm-hmm. Open the door, Richard. Open the door and let me. Yeah, it's got that 40s big band sound.
Right.
But, yeah, I have a soundtrack. I've got actors who I've cast in my mind as I'm writing.
Do you have hybrid actors sometimes? I'm kind of mishmashing these two people together to get like ears of somebody and a nose of somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Barbara, Joe's secretary. I always thought of Lauren Bacall, but kind of a younger, more the first time she and Bogart meet into Have and to Have Not, but maybe a little bit older. Mm-hmm. Guess the age range. But then, I know I was talking about Bogart earlier, but my vision of Joe Maxwell was a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. And I, for some reason, I don't know why, but Farley Granger comes to my mind.
Okay.
There's a picture. He's in a movie called Small Town Girl, and he's in this gray Glenn plaid suit, and he's leaning up against a pillar, and he's watching Jane Powell sing. I go, man, that's a cool looking dude. Mm-hmm. He's got the black, slick back hair and everything. Mm-hmm. That's Joe Maxwell.
Slick back hair is a must. Yes.
Yeah, and that he's about that age, because I had Joe and get kind of mid to late 20s. He had just come back from the war. I cast him in my mind. Peter Lorre, I have him as one of my bad guys. I'm sounding out the dialogue, and I'm sure my family thinks I've gone crazy. So.
I definitely do that. I've actually taken to writing in the early morning because I talk out my dialogue.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like constant rephrasing of the same sentence over and over and over again.
Yeah. Or in my attempts at a New York accent, like if I'm trying to do a mafia heavy,
Right.
What do you think you're doing? Who do you think you're dealing with here?
So have you started writing the second book? Or are we still in
I have actually written the first sentence. I've got the first sentence
nice.
Written.
That's a start.
The intro is awesome. And I've done my Sid Field cards for Act One. I've got them up on my board here. You can't see it on the other side of the camera here, but I have Act One ready to go. I wanted to finish the research. So I'm doing a little bit about the Hollywood 10 and then a little bit more about Los Angeles in that time period. I have completed some research like on the underworld of Los Angeles, the crime families, the Johnny Roselli, who's the other character? But I did some research, kind of what that structure like.
You can't police, have an early LA without a mob influence.
And then, the police, how they were kind of under the influence, kind of that LA confidential, that was real.
Right.
That was real. So I have that. So I just want to finish up, part a little bit of research on Hollywood. I think I can go ahead and start writing it. So
nice. As you were writing your first one, did you notice that your prose changed at all, or your writing style changed?
I tend to be very descriptive. I mentioned Hemingway earlier. When I first went to college, everybody takes English composition, I think, freshman year. And I wrote a paper, sent it into the professor. I get it back, and it's like he bled all over it. There was red marks all over the place. And at the top right-hand corner, he goes, Are you intentionally trying to copy Hemingway? And so I went to him, I said, what are you talking about? He goes, you are writing, it's like you're trying to copy his style. So that's, I didn't intend, I've only read two, up until that point, I only had read two books by Hemingway, but I try to be descriptive. I'm assuming the reader does not know what street the Ebbets Field or Yankee Stadium is located on. I'm going to assume that, or what a police precinct questioning room would look like. Yeah, I'm going to assume they don't. And
it
I'm going to describe
fit your genre. The description does definitely fit the noir genre.
And then, you know, coming from the first person, you know, you do want to know his or her feelings. You know, if you're if you're writing from a first person, from a female perspective as well, you want to know their feelings because you're kind of inhabiting that person as you're reading it. You're seeing it through their eyes. So I tend to be a little bit more descriptive. Obviously, you know, I don't want to be too descriptive when it comes to areas of anything gratuitous or anything like that. I try not to be.
You gotta be descriptive to a point, and then
my language. It was funny because I did include some swear words, but I was thinking, okay, my mom's gonna be reading this. I think I can get away with a mm-hmm and a but you know. So I'll have some swear words there, but I don't want to use that word as an adjective or a verb.
Did you read any books in the genre before you got started to help you get the tone, or did you just take it strictly from your mind?
Yeah, I did. Raymond Chandler, amazing. I want to say I tried to read Elmore Leonard. He's an amazing writer. Don't get me wrong. It's just a lot being thrown at me when I tried to read Walter Mosley, the Easy Rollins series. Highly recommend him. They made it into a movie, Devil with a Blue Dress, with Denzel Washington. If you read the book, first before you see the movie, because the movie's a little
of
different.
Of course, yes.
I always recommend the book. The Easy Rollins books by Walter Mosley are really good as well. But the Raymond Chandler, the Dashiell Hammett. Those would be some of my influences.
Oh, I was going to say, what were your influences from those? Like anything in particular inside them that really influenced you?
Well, the patter. The back and forth, sometimes the conversation. I think from Chandler, the back and forth, the walk and talk, as they say, some of the lingo, how they refer, pal, or give me the straight dope on something, kind of the talk there. With Mosley, just his the descriptiveness. He describes Easy's home. And the fruit trees that he has out in the backyard, is the oranges and the lemons. I mean, you can almost smell it the way he describes. Right. I'm like, man, I wish I could do that. Write it to where you could actually smell the orange trees, or he's got these flowers or these blossoms in the front yard, and a lot of times Easy's tending to his garden when somebody comes up and say, hey, need you help solve a case.
So it's his escape.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. And Easy is a, an African-American detective. So, of course, you add to, a lot of the racism and things that his character would have to deal with, which is it's like I said, it's a credible series. I'm not all the way through yet. I've only read about the first four or five books, but incredible series.
They sound awesome. I'll have to give them a shot. I mean, not that my reading list isn't like 12 books.
I was
going to
say, I've got
a
stack of books. Yeah, you could, behind me here. my little portable library here. So
I know. It's like my reading list just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not including all the ones that, people recommend that you read.
True.
You're like, I already got 15 at home. Come on.
Yeah.
So this has been awesome. Where can listeners find your first book?
Okay, so for the first book, I do have that available on Amazon.
Okay.
And you just, you know, click, and I'm not sure if you'll have a link to it in the show notes.
I'll put it in show notes, yes.
But you get it's available through Amazon, and it's, mm-hmm. it's an ebook. I wasn't sure as far as the cost of doing self-publishing, mm-hmm. Paper, but ultimately a goal would be I would love to hold a book that I've written, flip mm-hmm. the pages through that. That would be awesome. But it's available as an ebook on Amazon, Red Zone Murders. And then I do have a website, glimwalkerbooks.wordpress.com. I do need to update it. I updated it recently, but I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Okay.
As well. So
that was going to be my next question. Where can they find you?
Yeah. So it's on Facebook, Glenn Walker on Facebook, and mm-hmm. Twitter is RecLaw67.
Okay.
That's my last name.
I'll make sure I put that one.
My last name spelled backwards.
Okay.
And I think Instagram is the same. I think it's RecLaw67. I'll double check real quick. I have to check here. let's see. RecLaw67 is the same on Instagram.
Nice. Well, it has been awesome talking to you. This was really interesting.
I enjoyed it, Deborah. Thank you for having me.
And thanks for being on.
Thank you.
Read and Write Podcast is edited and produced by Deborah Z. Barth. Music was provided by Lo-Fi Girl and can be found at lofigirl.com or on their YouTube channel. Audio effects were created by Red Octopus and Black River Phonogram. Show notes and previous episodes can be found at readandwritepodcast.com. And that's it. Thank you for listening to the show. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to rate Read and Write on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you have a suggestion for a future episode, drop me a line. I'm always open to suggestions. Also, did you know that Read and Write publishes 3 episodes a week? Check out the podcast's YouTube channel for Write With Me Mondays live streams and 30-second book reviews on Fridays.